Check us out to hear the latest on life in the Volunteer State. Ivanka and her guests discuss everything from life, love, and business with a Tennessee flair.
It's a Tennessee thing!
Always relatable,
always relevant,
and always a good time. This is Talkin' Tennessee. And now your host, Ivanka.
This episode is brought to you by Landis Home Collection, the place where you can find home decor items, self-care items, and so much more. Shop with us and get the right things for you and your home at www.landishomecollection.com.
Welcome back to part two of the Talking Tennessee interview with T. Martin, 1998 National Championship winning quarterback at University of Tennessee. Glad to be here with you, sir.
Thanks for having me.
So, first time round, you were talking with my wife, Ivanka, about your time at UT. Quick question. So, you got kids that obviously play sports.
Most people
know that. How did your time at UT and your recruitment, how did that influence the decisions that you were able to help guide your kids through and the decisions they made?
Really, allowing them to make their own decisions. You know, for me, my recruiting process, I pretty much led it, you know, myself. My mom really trusted my decision making, and she never came on an official visit. My mom did not take one official visit with me, not one time. And I came home one time, and I was kind of like, you know, not happy about it. And she was like, "You're the one that got to go to school. You're the one that got to play." And I said, "You know, you're right." And so I told her about it. I told her, and she would kind of listen and look at my body language of how I felt about people, and kind of helped me get to my decision. And so when my oldest son Amari went through his process, I said, "Look, man, You have to go and play at this place. You need to be happy with your role in the offense and that staff." And Caden, who went through a process as well, and he's back in the process again. It's about where you want to be. And so I've really given him advice. I really talked about my successes and failures and things that I wish I had done differently, and then let them go from there. But I'm happy with every decision that they both have made. And I have a little 11-year-old that I'm trying to raise up, and we'll see if he'll be an athlete or not. But I let them make their own decisions.
So you and Amari missed out on NIL money.
Definitely, right.
So is Caden actually getting to enjoy that? Does it throw another wrinkle in the process?
Not really, because he did. You know, it was the first time, and he did well, you know, off the field this year down at the University of Miami. So my wife and I set up an account for him, and we were like, "You know this thing called taxes, you know?" And so we set an account, and we were the ones that would take half of it and basically put to the side, because at some point you have to pay taxes on it. So it was a good opportunity for us to talk to him about money and just managing money and some of the bills that I was paying. I said, "Oh no, you got some money, you know, you can pay it.
That's all you now.
Yeah, you can pay for that flight. You can do this." So, it was good. It's just another opportunity for us to parent, you know, through money.
So, and Caden's obviously in the portal, I think.
Yeah.
So, how do you think that NIL in the portal, would you have done anything differently back then? And then also, how do you think that's impacting and is shaping the game now?
Yeah, I don't know how much that would have impacted my decision to go to school, because I was more thinking about how are they going to make me better. Mm-hmm. And I also understood that there was no amount of money you can give me in high school that's going to equal the amount of money I can make in the National Football League. If I make the wrong decision to go to the wrong school and be coached by the wrong people, it's going to cost me millions. So do you want to take a few thousand just because it's money?
Right.
And it's going to cost you millions because you went to the wrong place, played on the wrong team, didn't have a good experience. It's going to cost you later. So I was more looking forward to what place can I go to help me become this total quarterback, more complete quarterback, so that I could make my money in the National Football League. And that's how I felt. So I don't think it would have affected me then. Now, after winning the national championship, we were undefeated. I would have loved to have bought a house and car and those kind of things with the money that could have been generated at that time.
Do you think that it's producing weaker athletes that, say, we're in your position where you've got to wait a year or two behind a Peyton Manning or somebody like that? Do you think that it's weakening the mentality of the athletes that won't sit and learn and be patient and grow themselves to get to earn their turn versus these guys that just, "I'm not going to play here. I'm going to go"?
I think it's speeding up the process of their minds and their maturity in terms of having to deal with this money now. I think that on one hand, it could be an opportunity to learn and be taught money before, if you make it to the National Football League, before you make more money, you know, millions of dollars. Hey, I've done a good job of handling 100,000, 200,000 or whatever these numbers are. Now I'm making more. It doesn't feel that much of a difference.
Right. Well,
or it could be what we are starting to see at sometimes is that hunger that you had to make it out, or that hunger that you had to, you were poor, you were eating ramen, noodles, you were, you know, eating Hot Pockets and all this kind of stuff. And you were like, man, I know I don't want to live like this much longer. Like they're eating Ruth Chris, and it's just different. Is it wrong? It's not necessarily wrong. It's just different. And I think that if I were 18 years old and I had a sense of making it already, I don't know if I would have been as hungry, because you're not hungry.
That's my concern.
You know what I mean? You're not hungry. You look at your bank account and you have more money in it than your mother and your dad. And so that's a different, that's different. Yeah. And I don't know how I would have responded to that. And so for me, what we're trying to do with our son, you know, who's currently a student athlete, is as much as he can stay normal and us still send him, you know, allowance and same thing you've been doing, we're going to keep it as normal as it always has been. And regardless of what the numbers are, once you get done, you graduate, you get done playing, it's yours. Go do what you want to do with it. But we're trying to keep him as normal as we can.
I think, too, you said a mouthful right there. I think, too, one of the big things I remember and one of the big things I took away from college, UT, was living as a broke college student and learning how to solve problems and navigate not having anything. So it may, you know, harm some of these kids not having that experience in life, because you go from whether or not, whatever you had growing up as a kid, if you go to college and you get this windfall of money, you don't go through that part of being, I mean, of being broke, you know. We were okay coming up as a kid, but I got to UT. My parents didn't give me spending money.
You know,
I had to figure out how I was getting in the party. I remember selling CDs at McKay's on the street.
There you go,
so man. I could go to whatever fraternity party, whatever. How I was getting my hair cut, whoever.
You know.
So I think that when you get a windfall like that and you don't get to navigate those channels, I think that it, I don't want to say it takes away from your college experience, but there's a valuable experience in some of that.
That's a value, You're right about that. You know, am I happy that they're able to get paid what they're worth? Yes, I am. And I wish that we had that opportunity. Because who's to say that you're going to have a great pro career? Yeah. You know what I mean? And for a guy like myself, it takes me 4 years.
Jerry Colquitt.
Jerry. Huge. Or even look at my career. I was drafted in the 5th round.
Yeah.
I probably would have made more money in college than I would have made in the National Football League. All right. So that's an example of how that could work for someone.
Right.
You know, and so I'm happy for them that they're experiencing that. I just hope that on an individual basis, families are allowing the young man to get the nuggets out of growing up and being a normal college student as best as they can.
Right. So you mentioned getting drafted. Mm-hmm. You got drafted to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And what year was that?
2000.
Who was there in 2000?
The head coach?
Bill Cowher. It was Bill Cowher. I know that. Who was it? Tommy
Quarterbacks? No, Cordell Stewart.
Slash was there.
Yeah, yeah.
What was it like knowing you're going to this big, you know, like Chicago Bears, Pittsburgh, you know, San Francisco? What was it like knowing you're going to play for one of these story franchises?
Man, I was honored, you know, because I'm very just appreciative to be drafted number one.
Right.
And then number two, my dad was a Steelers fan. My dad wore number 17 because of Jefferson Street Joe Gilliam. Right, I had an opportunity to wear number 17 for the Pittsburgh Steelers due to Jefferson Street Joe Gilliam. I had an opportunity to meet Joe G. And so, I honor the game and I honor the people that came before me. And when I had the opportunity to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers, even though it was the 5th round and I was mad and just thought I should have got drafted before that and all that, I was like, man, I'm going to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Then I get a chance to play with Cordell Stewart, who at the time was doing unbelievable stuff at quarterback and doing a bunch of stuff. And that was really cool for me.
Yeah. A lot of people don't realize Joe G was, a lot of people said that he should have been what Terry Bradshaw was to Pittsburgh. I think that he had some off the field issues or whatever and never really got a fair shake at that quarterback job. But that history, that franchise could have been a lot different
if Joe G, who was a black quarterback at the time, which was almost unheard of, had actually stayed the course and gotten that. So mm-hmm. it's cool that you got to do that behind Connors mm-hmm. and then again to go to Pittsburgh. Yeah. That's really cool. So what was the biggest challenge of transitioning from college to NFL?
The biggest challenge for me was handling being drafted in the fifth round and understanding that at that draft slot, you're not going in really to compete for the job.
Right.
And then when you get drafted somewhere where the quarterback just signed a new contract, you're really like, am I really competing? You know, and so for me, I'm an ultimate competitor that wants to compete to play. And that just took a lot out of my just NFL experience, you know, mm-hmm. and when I don't really think that I have a chance to really be the starter, like, why am I out here? And so I just didn't have a window of opportunity to win the starting job, like never throughout my career. So
right.
it was Cordell's on a new contract. Then after that, I go to Philadelphia with Donovan McNabb. Then I go from there to the Oakland Raiders where Rich Gannon was a guy. So I never had, you know, this opportunity where someone was injured or something happened where I got a chance to play, gain experience, right. get better, to play longer. And so that was tough for me. It wasn't the speed of the game or what, you know, learning, none of that. It was just, I don't know if I'm even have a chance to really be the starter, you know? And so that took away from me from a competitive standpoint.
Do you wish you'd gotten drafted somewhere else where you got a better shake at things?
Well, you can't control it, you right. know? You just can't control it. You know, once you get to the fifth round or whatever, yeah, you want to be drafted, but you almost wish to go undrafted where you could pick your opportunity, you know, but I couldn't control that. You know, I had to right. go where I was drafted. And so, but I knew right then, man, Cordell Stewart's the guy. And, you know, okay, I'm out here and playing in the preseason. I'm doing what I'm doing. But when you're like a real competitor, it's just hard for me to just, you know, give it 2,000% when you're like, at the end of the day, he's going to be the starter day one. Unless some injury, you know, happened to him, which you don't wish down your teammate. You know, and so I kind of went through my career preparing to be a coach. Right. Like every year that I played football in the NFL, I was taking notes and keeping playbooks because I knew I wanted to coach.
That was going to be and actually so my next question. Did yeah. you always know you wanted to be
I
a wanted, coach?
I knew I wanted to be a coach like when I was a kid.
From your coaches that you have all the way from Pee Wee all the way up, mm-hmm. what coaches specifically can you look back on and say, I want to be a coach because of this, yeah. or this person left me with this, and I'm going to carry this?
Pretty much every one of them. From Henry Pugh, we talked about Rick Nady, we talked about Coach Curtis Horton, my high school coach, who would pick me up on his way to work. You know, I lived far away, and he picked me up, bring me in. Coach Pugh, it was times where we moved across town. I would get out of school, take a bus to the mall, sit on the curb at the mall until he picked me up from work, take me to football practice, and then take me home. Like that kind of love and care and concern and motivation and just strong black men who really right. didn't have to do what they did, didn't ask for anything. And when I made it to NFL, didn't ask me for anything. You know, it's like that made me say, all right, I want to be that guy for somebody else.
Now, people underestimate that. I a really close family friend of ours passed away recently, and mm-hmm. I told my wife, because I was raised by a white family, I was adopted, mm-hmm. but I told my wife there is something about older black men mm-hmm. and the wisdom that they mm-hmm. can impart
yeah.
that once you get that, once you have that in your life, mm-hmm. as those people leave your life for whatever reason, mm-hmm. you miss that.
Yeah,
And that's huge in a young black man's life.
Mm-hmm.
I got it from other sources,
yeah.
but I don't know if I'm the man that I am today without right. that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So when you where was your first coaching job?
Morehouse College.
Morehouse.
Yes, Morehouse College.
Were you a quarterback's coach?
I was quarterback coach. Yeah, I was training. I had just got released, and I was training on their track in their field.
Uh-huh.
You know, staying in shape for a call, and call didn't come. Didn't get a call. And the head coach saw me and knew who I was. He said, "Hey man, you want to help out with our quarterback?" So I was like, "Okay." Found myself like. Being there all the time. And then he's like, "You got a call yet?" And it was almost the end of training camp. And I still hadn't gotten a call yet. And he's like, "Do you want to be our coach?" And I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, we don't have no money." And I was like, "You'll have no money?"
That was before Deion shut
down. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? He's like, "Man, it's kind of going to be, I don't know, man, this is that. I can help you with this and that." At the time, I was, you know, it was whatever. I was like, all right, cool. So I worked at Morehouse College, and I think the whole season I made like $800.
Wow.
But I did other stuff, and I had money, but.
I hear that a lot from graduate assistants and whatnot that are trying to get in.
Yeah.
You know, they're living with 3 and 4 roommates and, yeah. And you know, eating ramen, like you said, and all that.
So. I had a wife and 3 kids.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So they weren't happy with roommates.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Nah, so where else did you coach? When you
yeah, so from Morehouse, I coached at North Cobb High School and North Atlanta High School, 2 high schools in the metro Atlanta area. And then from there, University of New Mexico, then Kentucky for 2 years, and USC for 7, Tennessee 2, and then now Baltimore Ravens.
What are the biggest differences in coaching from high school to college to NFL? What are the differences?
Yeah, high school, those kids show up because they love it. Right. And as a staff, you can't control who walks through the doors. You got to coach who you have. Right. And you get the most out of them. And so that was great in and of itself. Just, hey, okay, here are the freshmen, so whatever. Let's make a good team, right? And when you don't know what system you're going to have until you know what kind of player you have, what kind of quarterback you have. Then going to college and being able to shop for your own groceries, you know, in recruiting. I was a receiver coach, and it's like, you want your room to look like this? You want to have 4-3 guys? Go get 4-3 guys, whatever it was, right? And just being around the staff and the next level of X's and O's and all that stuff, and then going to the National Football League, it's like doctorate level, you know, football. You know, it's just all football.
If you got your choice, money, professional growth is out of it, where are you coaching?
In college or pro?
Or high school?
Shoot, if I could choose, I'd do a little bit of all of them. Like, if I could pick my perfect world, they would all be played at different times of the year. So that just everybody, you could have year-round football. If I could be the ruler of the world, which I can't, but I would have year-round football, and you could have pro coaches coaching in college. You can have college dudes coaching everywhere. And you can make more money, create more jobs, but I don't make those decisions.
And then also as coaches, you know, you guys are leaders of young people, whether you're coaching women's sports, men's sports, youth, peewee, professional, and you're leaders of men.
Yeah.
At what stage do you think you have the biggest impact as a coach?
That's a great question. I think that you have a huge impact on all levels, but I think the impact is just in different areas of their lives. All right, young people, you may be his idea of a father figure.
Right.
You may be the most positive or negative thing in his life if you're doing it right or if you're doing it wrong. You have to understand what you may mean to this young man and what you may say and how he takes it, right? And your team as a whole, you're teaching them how to be responsible, disciplined, work hard, how to get up from being not now. All right, then you move on to this college level where they're going from being kind of like young, you know, adolescent boys to men on the other end. They're coming in at 17, 18, and leaving out at 21, 23. And you're like in the middle of that growth where some of them may become fathers during that time. Some of them may face going from being a 5-star to not playing at all. And you have to live with them through the ups and downs. And they're in your office and they're crying and things that get homesick and you kind of live with them through that. Then you go to the National Football League. Well, they don't need any of that. They're married. They got kids. They're rich already. But they want to be great. They want to be challenged. They want to be held accountable. They want to win too. And they still call you and cry at times. And you don't think so until you get that first pro football player in your office going through it. And you realize that, man, they're people. You know, whatever level you're coaching on, these are human beings that go through stuff. And so I think that the impact is felt on every level. It's just like different angles and kind of the depths of it on the different levels.
Right. So you coached how many years now?
Where? All together?
All together. 20?
I don't even remember. No, I don't know. I think I started coaching in, when did I start coaching? 06, I think.
Okay.
07, somewhere in there.
15. Yeah. So you take all this experience as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
What is Coach Martin?
Yeah.
Go back and teach quarterback T. Martin, whether it's about life, football, whatever. Yeah.
Oh, man. Shoot. Everything. Start with fundamentals.
Right.
You know, I think that during our time, the fundamentals of coaching quarterbacks was very basic. You know, you were either accurate or you weren't. It wasn't all of this private training that you have now where I could, at Tennessee, if I was struggling with accuracy, could go out to California and train with this private dude for months and get better, or that fly that guy in to help me and all this stuff. We didn't have 7-on-7s where in high school you throw the ball 500 more times in the summer than you would have been just hanging out with your receivers on your team. So I think quarterbacks are better developed now. It's a good thing. I would start there. I would start with training from the neck down, which is the body mechanics, the motion of the body, how to move the body, the efficiency of your drops, the efficiency of your body, how you're throwing the ball, all this stuff. And then from the neck up, like I was, and David Cutcliffe trained us to manage everything as quarterbacks. I would even take it to the next level with what I know now if I had a chance to coach a guy like myself at that time.
So today, now, you get up every day. We know how disciplined coaches have to be, just like athletes, but even on a different level, on an exaggerated level, actually.
Yeah.
So what words and mantras do you live by every day when you wake up?
Stars have to shine, and you have to spread light. And what I mean by that is as a leader, if no one is following, then you're not leading. If you're not shedding light or spreading light on people and helping them become better, then why are you there? If you're a teammate and all you do is take from your team and you're not giving anything back, they don't need you, right? If it's all about me as a coach, like I'm willing to say that I've never had a chance where I undressed a player in front of the team,
right?
Because at that moment you're just being selfish. It's your fault that he don't know. As a coach, you should be angry with yourself. So with me as a coach, I just think that the best players on your team and the best coaches are the ones that give the most. They're the ones that are just that servant type leadership. And those players who we always say, he's unselfish, or we like to use the word humble, or whatever it is, right? I think the stars have to shine every day. And, when I wake up, I'm happy to wake up, and I'm blessed to wake up another day and be in the position that I'm in, because I know, even though your players may not thank you every day, you know that they appreciate you.
Right.
Even though the head coach might not say thank you to the assistant coaches every day, you know that he appreciates you and your work, because when the moment you stop, you're not going to be there.
That's right. So what do you do daily to teach that mantra to your kids and the players you coach? What do you do on a regular basis?
How I live my life by example, I'm up every morning on my Peloton bike taking care of me first.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's meditation, whether it's just taking myself through something hard every day, like I feel like every day I need to push myself to a certain limit, physically and mentally,
right,
to get the best out of me. Because if I can't be my best, then how am I going to be good for somebody else? How am I going to talk to Lamar and our quarterbacks about that if I'm not doing it myself?
Right.
How am I going to tell my 11-year-old son who hears my Peloton music going off at, 5:36 in the morning to be in shape and work out if he don't see me doing it first? And so I, it's not nothing that I preach per se. It's just when I come into a quarterback meeting early in the morning with a towel dripping sweat around my neck, I'm already done and you guys haven't even started yet.
Right. They know you've been getting it.
You don't even have to say anything.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so I just think it's about how you live your life, and people will see it.
So, backing off the football aspect, you've got to meet you mentioned a lot of big names, but you've got to meet a whole bunch of people along the way in your journey.
Yeah.
Who was the one person that T. Martin met that left you starstruck?
Charlie Ward. The night before we played the national championship game, Charlie Ward was, if there was an idol when I was growing up as a high school quarterback of who I wanted to be like, I wanted to be Charlie Ward at Florida State. I used to wear Florida State hoodies at school.
Right. did you keep it together?
All this stuff. No, I gave him his roses. No, I was fanboy at that time. But no, that was it. And then we just stayed in touch. And he actually, I was writing a book and I got to finish it. But he actually wrote the foreword to my book. And that was great.
A lot of people don't realize Charlie Ward back then was won the Heisman. Then he goes, I'm not going to play football. I'm going to play basketball. And he was a cold point guard. He played with Allen Houston from UT.
Mm-hmm.
And now Charlie, he's down to earth. He's not flashy.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I read about him, everything I see about him, he's out doing for other people more so than anybody else.
Yes.
So that's a good one to hold in that position.
Yeah, it was Charlie Ward, man.
So, you know, how do you take everything you've been through
mm-hmm.
and say, this is what I'm going to do to help the next generation?
Yeah.
How do you put everything that you've been through, all your experiences mm-hmm. in a box and say, I'm going to give this, I'm going to give this, I'm going to give this.
Man, that's the challenge right there, what you're saying, because you can get so busy in your own life that you look around and you haven't made much time for that. And so you have to force yourself to do it. And that's the thing is, everything that we are today is a combination of our experiences.
Right.
And if I can just give back by doing things like this, if I can just give back by speaking places or just what some messages I leave on social media, you just never know who you're watching, who's watching you.
Right.
Or anytime, you know, my son, Cannon, he's 11. He has a classmate that is going through a tough home life. And, you know, he's a kid, you know, in the Baltimore area. And, you know, I came home and I just kind of recognized what it is. And I told my wife, I was like, I want him around as much as possible
right.
because I was him. Like, I used to have to be at my friend's house for a good environment or
right.
food at times or whatever it was. And he's a great kid. And he's like, he didn't even know that I was a coach for the Ravens,
mm-hmm.
you know, and my son didn't really talk about it. And when he found out, he just like lost his mind and all this stuff. But it brought credibility to the relationship. But at the same time, it was just authentic. And I just right. think that we just need to be real. And I think you'll end up helping just by being real with people.
So what advice can you give to other people mm-hmm. about giving back, about leaving a mark?
Yeah, you know? Is that you didn't get to where you got to alone.
Uh-huh.
And that it's just kind of our duty to get back. You know, I just really feel that way. It's,
right.
You know, whether you're doing it through tithes and offerings in the church, whatever you believe in, or whether you're doing it in time, or whether mm-hmm. you're doing it through your connections to help people.
Right.
I try to do that a lot because sometimes I may not have time, but I can connect you with someone who can help you when I can't. And so however we can extend ourselves and multiply ourselves to be in places that we can't go to help people, we got to try to do that as much as you can and be intentional about it. You know, be intentional about it. Say that I'm going to give this amount of money or this amount of time or whatever that is.
Right.
And actually do it.
There's two things that get spoken about in this household a lot. Number one, being intentional.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, what are you doing to benefit people outside of these four walls?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can, well, I'm doing a great job of raising my kids, or, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going out, I'm making a paycheck, I'm supporting my family. Yeah. No, what are you doing to benefit people outside of your household, outside mm-hmm. of your four walls, and how are you going about it to be intentional? So mm-hmm. it's cool to hear you say that, knowing those are two big things that we talk about
mm-hmm.
and we try to be about in this house.
Right.
So, you know, you hear
yeah,
it from
it's great.
You hear it from the Martin household. You hear it from the Landis household.
That's right.
It's
right.
got to be true. So, if T. Martin doesn't follow athletics and get to where he is today, what's T. Martin doing now?
I'd be a mechanical engineer, like my uncle Arthur.
My dad's a mechanical engineer. Yeah.
I was in Satan Club. I did all of the engineering things in high school and all the competitions of building bridges and dropping eggs on rubber bands. And I wanted to be an engineer. My mind works that way, creatively. You know that, or I would be an African American history professor at a major college or university. So I'm kind of split between African American history and creating things and being creative.
The T. Martin obviously spends a lot of time coaching, raising a family, all this. But what do you do to unwind? What does T. Martin do to relax
yeah.
when you don't have, you know, 10 things on your schedule for the day?
fathering. just trying to be the best dad, husband I can be to my family. Then I like reading. I like writing. I like writing my thoughts, whether it's in poetry form or just journaling, that kind of thing. And just spending time in nature. I like taking long walks. And, you know, I don't take my bike out. I got a Peloton, but maybe I progressively, you know, cycle. But I like walking. I like finding trails. I have this app called All Trails. And
right.
Whatever city I go to, I find two things. One, a good trail to walk. And number two, a historical tour or just something historical and as it relates to African-American history or just I'll go to a city and go, why did people stop their wagons here and decide that they wanted to live here? Like, what was it? You know what I mean? And I just want to learn that. And so I'll just go to that city's historical museum and just try to figure it out. But I have a passion for history and learning things and where I am in the world and how it relates to my experience.
Cool. So at the end of the day, when it's time to hang everything up, outside of your family, because we all going to look back and say, did I do right by my family?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, what are you going to look back on and say, man, that was awesome. I did that. They can't take that away from me. What's that one thing for you?
Just to see the fruits of your kids. I think that's the best way to look at it is like when you see your kids go off and you don't have to worry about them at night, then you feel like you did a good job as a parent.
Right.
And then when you see them grow up and graduate college and have kids and be good parents and marriage and all these different things, I just want to be, you know, sitting back with a bunch of kids in the house and still cooking my ribs and my baked beans and mac and cheese and have a bunch of little kids running around and they still like granddaddy's food, man.
That'll like, do it.
That's it for
right there. Well, man, I'm going to get you out of here, y'all. Yeah. This has been T. Martin. This has been Talking Tennessee with Ivanka, but not really. It's me. But thank you for coming out, man. I enjoyed talking to you.
Appreciate it, man. I enjoyed
the memories that you trigger for me. And continued success, and we wish you all the best.
In time. Thank you so much. Thanks for having
Appreciate
me.
Yeah, you got it, bro.
Thanks for listening to Talkin' Tennessee with Ivanka. Watch out for our weekly episodes from the First Family of Real Estate. And check us out on the web, www.YvankaSalesRealEstate.com. See our videos on Ivanka's YouTube channel or find us on Facebook under Ivanka Landes and Twitter at Ivanka Landes. And don't forget to tell a friend about us. Until next time, Ivanka signing off.